If you're here for the first time, you're stepping into a conversation that we've been having for almost this is the sixth week now. So we've been in the book of Daniel going through a series called In the Fire. And so I would encourage you, if you can, to go back and listen to the first five sermons because this is a continuation of everything we've been learning so far through the book of Daniel about a group of young, what started off as young teenagers who were exiled from their land, ripped from their land, forced into a new identity, forced into a new culture, into a new world, into a new environment where they're having to, they're being challenged and tempted to turn away from the things they've been taught to believe their entire life. And they're being challenged and persecuted, if you will. And in the book of Daniel chapter 6, we find ourselves in yet another scenario. Now, just to give you a little bit of context, in Daniel chapter 6, by the time we get to Daniel chapter 6, Daniel is about 80 years old, and he might even be a little older than 80 years old. When he first came into Babylon as an exile, he was just a teenager between the ages of 14 and 16. And so by this time, Daniel has had a little bit of life experience. By this time, Daniel's been in this game for over five decades. It's over 50-something years where he's been, his faith has been tested. He's gone through the fire. He's faced obstacles along the way, and he's faced challenges along the way. And something that's amazing about Daniel and is a picture for all of us today is that no matter how much your life changes, no matter how difficult your circumstances may be, no matter what conflict you might face, one thing about you should remain the same forever, and that is your faithfulness unto the Lord. That no matter what you face in life, your circumstances may change, the obstacles may change, the conflict may change, your authority may change, which we'll see in chapter 6. Now Daniel is under a new ruler whose name is Darius. And this guy is from, he's not even a Babylonian. Now he's a Mede. That, remember, last week we talked about how the Medes and the Persians were already at the gates getting ready to take over Babylon. The king Belshazzar is now dead and killed. The Medes have now come in and taken over. We have a new king in place. And now Daniel is not only having to deal with everything he had to deal with through Babylon and their reign, but now he's got a new people that come in and a new way of thinking and a new way of believing and a new conflict to face and a new authority to face. But the one thing that remained the same forever was the constant of who God was to Daniel and what he believed. This is why it's so important that you know what you believe and in whom you believe, because it determines how you live your life. Because if there's one thing about life that you will learn very quickly, is that it is constantly changing. It is constantly evolving. There will always be new obstacles to face. And when you feel like you jump one hurdle, there will always be another hurdle waiting for you. And when you feel like you've gone through this persecution, there will always be another persecution that you have to confront and you have to face. And that's where Daniel is. He's now over 80 years old. He's been in the game for a long time. He's now seen multiple authorities and leaders who have different expectations of him, but his character, his identity, his integrity, and his love for God never wavers. So we see in chapter 6, verse 1, where it introduces us to this king whose name is Darius. And it says, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps, which satraps were just governing officials. So think of Darius as like a king or a president. You have the president, and then you have governors and mayors and all those other, you know, senators and all that stuff that are under the king or the president who rules. So these guys were like governors over the different lands. So he has 120 that he sets over the kingdom to be throughout the whole kingdom. Verse 2, and over them three high officials, of whom Daniel was one,
to whom these satraps should give account so that the king might suffer no loss. Verse 3 says, then this Daniel became distinguished above all other high officials and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Then the high officials and the satraps sought to find a ground for complaint against him, against Daniel, with regard to the kingdom, when they could find no ground for complaint or any fault. Because, and underline this, he was faithful and no error or fault was found in him. Verse 5 says, then these men said, we shall not find any ground of complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God. Verse 6, then these high officials and satraps came by agreement to the king and said to him, O King Darius, live forever. All the high officials of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the counselors and the governors are agreed that the king should establish any god or an ordinance and or enforce an injunction that whoever makes petition to any god or man for 30 days except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it can be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked. So we have this king whose name is Darius. He is a Mede who's conquered Babylon, and now he sets up a new government. And Daniel, now in his 80s, is chosen as one of the top three administrators in the kingdom. And he's so exceptional to that king that the king then makes plans to promote him and make him one of the highest officials in the land, to make him number one in the whole kingdom. And this is where jealousy from the other guys begin to creep in. And the other officials, they look for a way to bring him down and to persecute him and to make it so that he doesn't receive this promotion. But here's the problem. When they look into Daniel's life, they find no way to accuse him. The Bible says that as they were looking, they fought and they sought no ground for complaint against him. Meaning that Daniel's life was so spotless and so blameless that they could not find any corruption within him. Because Daniel is such a man of integrity that the integrity that he conducts himself with is one that is both public and private. I wonder if the same thing could be said of us. Like I know that at work they think you're the man. But what do your children and your wife have to say? Are you the same person in public that you are in private? That when your life is examined, can people look at your life and actually say these things? That you have an excellent spirit about you, that there is no fault that they could find within you, that your private life and your public life both match up and there is no deceit within you. And so what happens is when these men find that there's no corruption in Daniel, they can't find a way to trip him up. They can't find that one thing that will expose his integrity and his character and his insecurities. What they then begin to do is they target his faith. And they manipulate King Darius into signing this decree that for 30 days, anyone who prays to anything other than him will actually be thrown into a den of lions. And the thing is, can the same thing be said about you when your life is examined? That they could find no fault, that they could find an excellent spirit, that there is no error, that there is nothing but righteousness found within your life. Because here's the thing, you have to resolve to remain pure in private before the pressure hits publicly. You remember that in Daniel chapter 1, Daniel and his friends had already resolved within their hearts that no matter what they encountered, no matter what they faced, that they would not defile themselves against the Lord. Now that was 14 to 16 years old, and he finds himself in a position at 80 years old where people are looking to find how he could be exposed. But Daniel has such integrity, and this integrity carries itself out throughout his entire life. Because Daniel did what many of us refuse to do, and I do include myself in this, is that Daniel had his set convictions before he was hit with the circumstances. You see, you have to set your convictions now before the conflicts and the crises come. You have to be resolved in your spirit now while things are good. Because let me tell you something. Craig Rochelle says this. You are either one of three people. You are the person that is in the middle of a situation. You're the person that is coming out of a situation, or you're the person who's getting ready to step in. And whatever situation you step into will reveal the character and the nature and the identity of the integrity that is in your heart. So what convictions have you set in place now that will ensure that you remain standing when the obstacles come? That will ensure that you remain standing when the condemnation comes? Because here's the thing. When you are faithful to God, you will have people who will condemn your faithfulness, and then you will have others who will condemn your faithfulness. You will have people in your life that when they look at your life, they want to promote you, they want to commend you, they want to acknowledge you, which was what King Darius was doing with Daniel. But then you will have another group of people in your life that will condemn you, that will persecute you, that will pursue you, that will put you down simply because your faith doesn't line up with their ideologies. And so either side of the spectrum, in this world, you will stand out one way or the other. And your faithfulness is exposed by the way that you respond to either. Can you be faithful when people love you and want to promote you? And can you be faithful when it's about to cost you something? Because here's the reality. Faithfulness will always cost you. But what the Bible makes clear is that being faithful, no matter what it costs you, it's always worth it. It'll cost you friendships. It'll cost you relationships. It might even cost you finances. It'll cost you, sometimes it'll cost your family. Sometimes it'll cost your friendships. Sometimes it'll cost you choosing whether you should step into a career or not. Sometimes being faithful to the Lord will always cost you something. The question is, do you believe God is worth your faithfulness? There will be people that will want to promote you, and there will be people who will want to persecute you. Your faithfulness, more often than not, will invite persecution. Your faithfulness will provoke opposition. Not everybody's going to like you. Not everybody's going to embrace you. In fact, I've heard it said that oftentimes if you're walking through life and not facing any kind of persecution, it's probably because you're walking through life in the wrong direction. If it's not causing you to rub elbows with people, to bump shoulders with people, to bump shoulders with ideologies and cultural teachings, if it doesn't make you feel a little bit uncomfortable, I promise you, you're not doing this right. And so I would examine my heart, and I would examine my life and ask, is the way that I'm living causing me to stand out? Is it causing people to look at me in awe and say, man, that's incredible how God uses so-and-so, man, that's incredible what God is doing in this person's life. Man, I want what they have. And is it causing you to stand out where it's like, man, if you don't change your ways, something's going to happen. I remember being 16 years old. I gave my life to Jesus when I was 16 years old. That's over 22 years ago. It's crazy that I can say that. I know some of you, I'm much younger than a lot of you. And then I'm also much older than a lot of you. But 22 years in this game, I used to be able to say at one point that I wasn't raised in the church, but now I know better. Now I can no longer say that because I've been in the church longer than I've been out of the church. But I remember being six long time. All right, I get it. That's not your amen moment, bro. You know, but I remember being 16 years old. And I was sharing this story. I went out with Isaiah on Friday, was it, Isaiah? Yeah, Friday. Isaiah was just baptized a couple weeks ago. And we were out having dinner together, and I was sharing with him my story. And I was sharing with him how when I was 16 years old, when I gave my life to Jesus, everything changed. Everything. Because when you come out of darkness into light, the light exposes darkness, and therefore, darkness has to flee. When you come out of bondage, chains have to be broken, and now you have to walk as a free person and not a bound person. And so things have to look different when you give your life to Jesus. There's not a person in the Bible who did not encounter the presence of God or the person of God, the image of God, which was Jesus, and left that encounter the same way they came. Either way, they were either transformed or they were triggered, but you were leaving different. And I remember being 16 years old, and you have to understand that what people saw about Jose was this crazy knucklehead who was always in fights, who was always cussing people out. You know, just I would fight teachers, I would fight students, I would, right? Charlie knows, sixth grade, we know. And he'll tell you, this man was crazy, right? Smoking pot, drinking, doing all this stuff. And then I became a follower of Jesus, and everything changed. Everything was different. The way that I talked was different. The way I interacted with people was different. The way that I treated others was different. The way that I honored my teachers was different. Everything about me was different. And I don't say that to promote myself, but there came a time where in Millville High School, you do what's called senior speeches, right? And in your senior speech, you have to write a speech about whatever and present it before your entire English class, right? So me being the guy who's only graduating with like a 2.35 GPA, well, if that's even possible, that's like a C minus 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 or like a D average, okay? Hi. That's your pastor. I had no idea what I would give a speech about. And the only thing that I could think of was, I'm just going to tell my story. And I sat up there, right, Carmen? I sat up there in front of all of my friends, well, the people I went to school with, who were in my English class, and I began to tell them, you saw the Jose that was full of anger. You saw the bully. You saw the partier. You saw the fighter. But you didn't see the Jose that was broken. You didn't see the nights I was sleeping on floors. You didn't see the tears I would cry asking, why would God allow me to go through this? And I began to just share my testimony. And then that led into sharing the gospel about, man, if you could only come to know Jesus, not only has my life changed, but your life could change too. And I remember that day was the first time ever that I felt like, man, I could possibly be called to sharing the gospel of Jesus with people, because there was not a dry eye in that place. When I got done, it was a standing ovation. I had the principal coming to me and asking me for a copy of my speech, because they're like, we want to hear. And I never forget that what ended up happening was God shined a light on what he was doing in my life. And then that drew people in to want to know. But then that also drew people in to go, yo, we don't like this new you. I had friends reaching out to me, and y'all young people don't know about this, but it was dial-up AOL. Yeah. You guys got like easy, you know, blue messages, and, you know, y'all know about that Yahoo chat room. Y'all know about that dial-up, And I'll never forget one of my friends was like, yo, like, I don't like this new you. And I was like, well, bro, you're going to have to either accept it, deal with it, or move on. We don't have to be friends no more if that's the case. Because the new me is here to stay. Here's a reality. Being a faithful follower of Jesus might bring you to lose some things. And sometimes the things that you lose are the weight that's holding you back from everything that God has for you. The question is, do you believe God is worthy of it or not? And will you choose to be faithful whether it costs you or it doesn't? Because one thing was sure about Daniel is that no matter what it cost him, he was only going to be faithful to one person and one person alone, and that was God. And that's the challenge for all of us today. Are you going to change your convictions because somebody says, hey, I don't like the new you? Are you going to change your convictions because you might not get the job opportunity that you want to get? Are you going to change your convictions because a nice, pretty girl or a handsome dude comes into your life and they're like, yo, what's up? And then you're like, let's get rizzy with it. I know the lingo. My kids are teaching me every day. Look at my son. Like, oh, God. The point is, are you going to choose to be faithful no matter what? Because there's nothing and no one in this world that's worth losing your life over. Nothing. And the sooner that reality becomes the belief that you live by, the better your life is going to be. However, comma, pause for effect. Better doesn't always mean easy. Good doesn't always mean easy. Because Daniel's better was, I'm going to be faithful to God, and his faithfulness led him to a lion's den. Now here's what happens in verse 9. It says, therefore King Darius signed the document. And when he signed the document, it says, when Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. Do me a favor, underline that. Circle that, highlight that. When Daniel found out what was going to happen, he didn't panic. He didn't freak out. He didn't lose his mind. He didn't go to Facebook and tell somebody off. He didn't post about like hashtag persecuted, right? Like he didn't lose his mind. He didn't lose his testimony. He didn't become this jerk overnight. He didn't resist the opposition. What Daniel did was he went back to his home. He went to a window where everybody could see. And when people said you couldn't pray at all to anybody but the king, Daniel decides to say, I'm not only going to pray once. I'm not only going to pray twice. I'm going to pray 3 times a day where everybody can hear me and everybody can see me, despite the fact that he knew what the consequences and the outcome would be. And the Bible takes it even further to say that he did this as he had done previously. Meaning that prayer had already become a habit to Daniel, not a response. I'll say that again. prayer had not only become a habit to Daniel, or it had already become a habit to Daniel, not a response. Here's the thing. If you want God's presence in the lion's den, you need to learn how to seek God's presence in the prayer closet. And for many of us, the problem is that prayer is simply just a response and not the habit of our life. It's a response to your crisis. It's a response to your circumstance. It's a response to your situation. But never do you actually pray just to seek the face and the presence of God. And I count myself in that. That when our difficult situations come up, we use our circumstances as an excuse to stay away from God. Or we use our circumstances as an excuse and a reason for pursuing God for the first time in our entire week. Like, we've ignored you all day. We've ignored you all week, month, year. We've ignored you for the past 6 months, 12 months, 30 months, whatever. But the moment something goes wrong, that's when I begin to seek your face. And what needs to happen is that needs to change and to take a different turn. And we need to see prayer from a different perspective. Prayer cannot simply be a response to our crisis, but the daily habit of our life. Prayer needs to be the essence of our being. Prayer needs to be something that we do every single day. It had become such a habit for Daniel that he didn't just do it every day. He did it 3 times a day. Notice that from the entire beginning of Daniel, every situation he found himself in, he found himself going back to the habit of prayer. When he's faced with the reality that his life is on the line, prayer wasn't something he just simply responded to do. See, here's the problem. Many of us treat prayer like the wrong wheel on a car. You're looking at me like, what do you mean? Many of us treat prayer like the spare tire that's in our trunk. Right? You only pull it up when you get that flat tire. And you hope that it'll get you so far. You hope that you put enough air in that spare tire because you don't even think about it. You hope that when you have to pull out that spare tire, it'll work the way it's supposed to work. And you hope that it'll get you from the being stuck on 55 to finally get you back home. That's how we treat prayer. When prayer needs to be treated more like the steering wheel that is helping us to navigate through the difficult times, that is helping us to get to our purpose, that is helping us to get to our destination, that we rely on to guide us and to lead us and to steer us and to navigate us. But we treat it as if it's something we only pull out when life gets difficult. What if we learn to rely on it for every day? What if we learn to use it as if it was valuable? Could you imagine having to steer a car without a steering wheel? Let's see how that will end up for us. And we laugh, but many of us are walking through life that way. We're walking through life without the steering wheel, hoping somehow we'll miraculously get to where we need to be and make it to the other side. What if instead of treating prayer like if it was something that was supposed to be a response to our crisis, we treated prayer as if it was something that was significant to our very life and existence? What if we treated prayer not just as a response, but a necessity, like the very air that we breathe? And I'm speaking to myself. Like, God, I don't hear from you. I don't see you. I don't know where my life is going. And yet I don't really seek your face at all. You see, here's the thing. If you want to be faithful in the crisis, you're going to have to learn to be faithful in the ordinary. If you want to be faithful in the crisis, you're going to have to learn to be faithful in the ordinary. To not just seek him when things are difficult, but to seek him because he's worth seeking. To not only need him when things go bad, but to need him because every day of your life you need him. That you can't be the man or woman that you need to be without him. That without his wisdom, without his guidance, without his direction, you will always lead your life into chaos. And prayer is the one thing that will help us to align ourselves to his will. To align ourselves to his purpose. To align ourselves to his desire. Yeah. And so Daniel does what he had always done. And that was to go into the prayer closet and to seek his face. And let me tell you something. Daniel was not doing this to make a point. And he also wasn't stopping to save his life. He was simply doing what he had already normally been doing. It's not like, oh, well, I didn't pray, and then we had a prayer service, and that's the one time in our life we prayed, and thank God everything changed. No, no, no. This wasn't something spectacular. It was just everyday life for him. It was ordinary. And I think a lot of times we actually miss the significance of ordinary obedience that is necessary for our faithfulness. You think it's going to missions trips and going to China and going to Colombia or doing this and doing that. But what if you were just faithful to your everyday ordinary generosity? What if instead of like finding that one thing that you do to serve the church, man, you were just faithful to your everyday service? What if God's will for your life isn't this extraordinary position, title, or purpose that you're looking for, but it's just walking every day in humility, in righteousness, in honor, and holiness, and surrender unto God, and that's just you doing the ordinary thing that you're supposed to do. If you want to see God do incredible things, and if you want to be faithful in the crisis, you need to learn how to be faithful in the ordinary. Amen? The Bible lets us know that when Daniel did this, those men then went back and reported it to the king, and the king reluctantly then has to follow through with his instructions. And it says in verse 13, it says, then they answered and said before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was much distressed and set his mind to deliver Daniel, and he labored till the sun went down to rescue him. And verse 15 says, then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, know, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and the Persians that no injunction or ordinance that the king establishes can be changed. So what's happening is the king does not want to persecute Daniel. The king does not want to throw Daniel in the lion's den. He's actually feeling really troubled about having to do so. And these guys are like, yo, you already passed this law. This can't change. You have to do what you said you were going to do. And so in verse 16 says, then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you. He already knew the testimony of Daniel. He got to see who Daniel was and whose Daniel was. He got to see that Daniel loved God and that he served God. And he actually loved that about Daniel. So he's now saying, as an unbeliever, man, may the God that you serve deliver you. Like, I'm actually believing for you that God would not allow you to die and be eaten by these lions. And then it says in verse 17, and a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. And verse 18, then the king went to his place and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled him. Meaning, this man was fasting. He was so troubled that he was fasting, and he didn't know who he was fasting to. And he was losing his sleep. And verse 19 says, then at break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. And as he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? And watch this. Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me because I was found blameless before him and also before you, O king. Here's what's significant about that. Number one, sometimes God doesn't deliver you from the troubles. Sometimes God delivers you through them. Sometimes God doesn't help you to, we've talked about this. God doesn't always help you to avoid the problems. Sometimes he goes through the problems with you. And the only way, the greatest way that you see his miracle power in your life is by being able to say, I don't know how I made it, but I made it through. Sometimes the greatest miracle you could experience is to say, the Lord is the one that got me through this. Sometimes the greatest miracle that you could experience is going back to your life and saying, yeah, I was diagnosed, but God got me through. Yes, I experienced this hardship in my life, but God was with me through it all. Yes, I dealt with sickness. I dealt with disease. I dealt with poverty. I've dealt with having to struggle with my bills. I dealt with having a struggling marriage. I dealt with being persecuted. But God was with me through it all. You know that every single day that you are walking in existence in this life as a believer of God, the greatest miracle that you can experience is the fact that God is with you every single second, minute, day, hour, month, year after year. But at some point or another, as long as you remain faithful and to him and trust him, trust you me, you will experience his presence and his power and see his purpose come to fruition. Now, what you have to realize is that this picture is a picture that goes beyond your surface level problems. Like, this is more than just not having enough money to pay my bills and God meets me in the need. This is more than just the world turned their back on me and God's with me. Remember that everything in the Bible, listen to me, everything in this book points to Jesus. Everything. That's how the book, that this is not even a book. It's a library. It's a library with many books written by many different authors throughout many different generations. And every single one of them point to one thing, and that's Jesus. So you're asking, Jose, how does this point to Jesus? At one point or another, all of us will be thrown into a den where we face the dangers of being consumed by lions. And the only way you will make it out of that den alive is because Jesus stepped into your judgment. Yeah. You're Daniel, facing judgment. The angel is Jesus, who left his throne in heaven, all of his glory, his power, his majesty, his divinity, identity, everything, and stepped into the den with you so that you could be found blameless in his eyes and in the eyes of everyone around you, not because of what you did, but because of what he did. That the only way you make it from being consumed by the very thing that is meant to kill you, which is the judgment and the wrath of God. And I know we don't like talking about that in church, but it is true. The consequences of sin is death. And the only way that you get to experience life is because Jesus stepped into the death that you deserved. And he laid down his life for you and shut the mouth of the thing that was bringing forth your death so that you can step out in life and give him glory and praise with the way that you live and the way that you conduct yourself. The fact is, you deserve the lion's den, but the other fact is that Jesus stepped into it so that you could come out of it alive and not dead. So that you could come out of it free and not a slave. So that you could come out of it not being impacted by death, its consequences, not being impacted by sin and everything that sin produces in your life, because he stepped in and saved you from it. So the question is, can you trust to believe that that could be true for you? Because listen to me. The greatest opposition that you could face in life is not the lack of provision. The greatest opposition you face in life is not your coworker who's giving you a hard time. The greatest opposition that you could face in life is not you arguing with your spouse or whatever. It's not a car accident. It's not a sickness. It's not a diagnosis. It's not lack. It's not need. The greatest opposition that you could ever face in life is the opposition of having to stand before God and not being able to be found blameless no matter what you do. That here's the reality. That when, remember, like we talked about last week, when God puts us on the scales of his judgment, we will always be found wanting. We will always be found lacking. When God steps in and looks at the tape of our lives, when he looks at the history, when he looks at your heart, there's not one of us, notice that I said us, there is not one of us, not even myself, that could stand before God and be found blameless. And if you think a lion's den is scary, imagine standing before God in all of your sin, in all of your dysfunction, in all of your impurity. That is not something that I want to encounter, and it is definitely not something I want you to encounter. The good news is that there's a way out, and that's doing what Daniel did, and that is putting your trust in the only one that can deliver you from the den. His name is Jesus. And he suffered a death that he does not want you to suffer. See, the deception is that God is this horrible God because all he wants to do is punish and judge. Well, if that's true, then he would have never sent his son, to die on your behalf, to face the judgment that you deserve, that I deserve. And trust me, I deserve it. If I could just be real honest with you for just one second, I've been a horrible husband. I've been a horrible father this week alone. I am not spotless. I'm not perfect. The good news is nobody in this room is. And the same way that I could stand up here and be confident in knowing that if I were to stand before God today, I would be found blameless, not because of anything that I've done, because I have failed over and over and over again, but because Jesus himself was blameless. That's what gives us confidence. That's what this story is about. And that truth is offered for you today. So I want you to bow your head and close your eyes. And normally I would have you pray this prayer with me, but I'm not going to do that today. I'm asking you to examine your heart. Examine yourself. Can the same thing about Daniel be said about you today? That when God examines your life, that you could be found blameless. Here's the reality, that without Jesus, that is not possible. And without Jesus, if you were to step into the den, you would be killed and eaten. But thank God for his riches in grace and mercy, that he stepped into our dysfunction and lived a life that we could not live, a life of perfection, a life that is blameless, a life that was perfect and beautiful, and died a gruesome death on a cross, being mocked, ridiculed, spit on, hung, stabbed, nailed, everything that you could even imagine, so that you wouldn't have to go through that yourself. And it's that finished work that enables you to stand boldly before him. But if you haven't put your faith in that, if you haven't received that, if you haven't acknowledged it, if you haven't confessed your sins unto God, that would not be your case. And so right now in this moment, I'm not gonna lead you through a prayer. I'm gonna ask you to lift your eyes to heaven and plead to God for yourself and confess your sins to him. Expose the reality of your soul to him. And then ask him to not only forgive you, but to step into your dysfunction and forgive you of it and cleanse you and make you new. So that when you stand before him on the day of judgment, you're not just hoping that you get to go scot-free, but you are standing confident, knowing that because of his work, you get to. Come on, just wrestle with him. Just let him deal with your heart.